Bhakti Jana Balaba Giri Parhari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Parhari. Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Prajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gaura Nithai, Jaya Gaura Nithai, Jaya Gaura Nithai, Jaya Gaura Nithai. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Hey, Sri Radha Madhava Ju ki, Sri Prabhupada ki. Jai Om Vishnu Para Paramahansa Paribrajaka Chaja. Ashto Torashata Shri Shiman, His Divine Grace, Abhoy Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Iskon Pratissa Acharya Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Ananta Kota Vaishnava Vrinda ki. Jai Namacharya Haridas Thakur ki. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garbha Shri Vashari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki. श्री राधा कृष्ण गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोवर्धन की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। नवदीप सी मायपोताम की जय। गंगमाई की जय। जामुनमाई की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। तुलसी महारानी की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Hari Hari Bol. So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 24, text number 53. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tvam. Tvam aham deva varam varanyam prabhadya isham pratibodhanaya shindya artipe bhagavan bachobi krantim hirdayam vivrinu Swam Pokaha Twam Twam Maham Deva Varam Vanyam Prapadya Isham Pratibodhanaya Chindyarta Diper Bhagavan Vachobi Grantim Hirdayan Vivrinu Swam Pokaha Vam Tvam Aham Deva Varam Renyam Prapadya Isham Pratipodanaya Sindhya Arta Diper Bhagavan Vachobi Grantim Hirdayan Vivrinu Swamukha Vam Tvam Aham Deva Varam Varnyam Prapadya Isham Pratibodhanaya Chindyarta Diper Bhagavan Bachobi Grantim Hidayan Vivrinu Swamukha Tvam Tvam Aham Deva Varam Varinyam Prapadya Isham Pratipodhanaya Chindyarta Diper Bhagavan Nuhi Rantim Kudan Grantim Hidayan Vivrinu Swamukha Tvam Tvam Aham Deva Varyam Venam Prabhadisham Pratipodanaya Chindyarta Dipe Bhagavan Bachobi Grantim Hidayan Vivrinu Swamukham Tvam Tvam Aham Deva Varam Varanyam Prapadya Isham Pratipodhanaya Chindyanarta Diper Bhagavan Bachobi Kranti Midayan Vivrinu Shamokan Vam Tvamaham Deva Varyanyabrinyam Prapitvita Bodhanaya Chindyay Pradiper Bhagavan Bachobi Kranti Midayan Vivrinu Swamukha Vam Tvamaham Deva Varnam Varnyam Prapadaisham Pratibodhanaya Chindyarta Dipe Bhagavan Bachobi Krantim Hidayam Vivinu Swaroka Dvam. How exalted you are. Tvam. Unto you. Aham. Myself. Deva Baram. Worshipped by the demigods. Varanyam. The greatest of all. Prapadyat. Fully surrendering. Isham. Unto the Supreme Controller. Pratibodhanaya, for understanding the real purpose of life. Chindhi, cut off. Arta dipaya, by the light of purposeful instructions. Bhagavan, O Supreme Lord, Bachobhi, by your words, Krantim, knots, hirdayan, fixed within the core of the heart, vivrinu, kindly explain, shvam, oka, my destination in life. Translation in purport by His Divine Grace, Abhay Charanada in the Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Gita. Translation. O Supreme Lord, for self-realization I surrender unto you, who are worshipped by the demigods as the supreme controller of everything. By your instructions, exposing life's purpose, kindly cut off the knot from the core of my heart and let me know the destination of my life. Please repeat. O Supreme Lord, for self-realization I surrender unto you, who are worshipped by the demigods as the supreme controller of everything. By your instructions, exposing life's purpose, kindly cut the knot from the core of my heart, and let me know the destination of my life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes it is argued that people do not know who is a spiritual master, and that finding a spiritual master from whom to get enlightenment in regard to the destination of life is very difficult. To answer all these questions, King Satyabrata shows us a way to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the real spiritual master. The Supreme Lord has given full directions in Bhagavad Gita about how to deal with everything in this material world and how to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, one should not be misled by so-called gurus who are rascals and fools. Rather, one should directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the guru or instructor. It is difficult, however, to understand Bhagavad Gita without the help of the Guru. And therefore the Guru appears in the Parampara system. In Bhagavad Gita 434, the Supreme Personality of Godhead recommends Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena shevaya upadek shanti te jnanam jnaninash tatva darshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Krishna directly instructed Arjuna. Arjuna is therefore Tattvadarshi or Guru. Arjuna accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Brahma, Param Dham, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavam. Similarly, following in the footsteps of Sri Arjuna, who is a personal devotee of the Lord, one should accept the supremacy of Lord Krishna. As supported by Vyasadeva, Devala, Ashita, Narada, and later by the Acharyas, Ramanuja, Madhavacharya, Nimbaka, Vishnu Swami, and still later by the greatest Acharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Where then is the difficulty to find a guru? If one is sincere, he can find a guru and learn everything. One should take lessons from the guru and find the goal of life. Maharaj Satyavrata therefore shows us the way of the Mahajana. Mahajano yena gata sha pantaha. One should surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dasavatara, and learn from him about the spiritual world and the goal of life. Om Agyanti Mitandasya Chananjanan Shalakaya Takshuran Militan Jina Tasmaya Shri Dhinna Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garatha Shiva Shari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So these very beautiful prayers. Maharaj Satyavrata is offering to the Lord. And he says, for self-realization I'm approaching you to offer prayers. I'm not coming to you to ask for money or wealth or position or fame. I'm coming to you for self-realization. I surrender unto you. So this is the position, the humble position of a devotee. He should be interested in self-realization. And so he associates with those who are also interested in self-realization. And he learns to surrender to the Guru, to the bona fide Guru. And he follows the process that's been given by the Guru. And if he's sincerely doing that, then he gets the result. By your instructions, you're exposing life's purpose, but nobody knows the purpose of life. You ask anyone, what is the purpose of life? Very difficult for them to understand. They don't understand. So this is the Guru's business, to explain what is the real purpose of life, which is to go back to Godhead. Ki jai, let's go. So this is the real purpose of life. But who understood that before we met a pure devotee, a representative of Krishna and Parampara? Nobody could really understand that. Even directly, you can't understand with the help of the, without the help of the Dhyacharya. Prabhupada said, that it was Brahma Samhita verse. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Radhi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. It's so direct. Ishvara, the controller. Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is that supreme controller. Sat is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Anadi Radhi is eternal. His name is Govinda. Sarvakaranakarana, he's the cause of all causes, the cause of everyone, all the different incarnations and all the everyone and everything. He's the cause of all causes. Prabhupada said it's so direct, but who would actually understand unless my Guru Maharaj explained? Because it could mean any Ishvara Parama, yes, that we're after, we want the Parama. Parama Krishna, Krishna, Krishna is black, means black. Black means unknowable. So many interpretations on such a direct verse. Mostly influenced by Mayavad philosophy. But the Guru comes and gives you parampara, and that is realized knowledge. So this is necessary. Realize knowledge. And so this is what Krishna has given us in Bhagavad Gita. By your instructions, exposing life's purpose. Exposing, it means by the mercy of the acharyas, they are revealing the meaning of the scriptures. Exposing life's purpose. Otherwise, who would know? So kindly cut off the knot of the craw of my heart and let me know the destination of my life. Another question, if you ask someone, what is your destination? They don't know. But we know our destination, and the acharyas have given it. Bhagavad Gita is a book on destiny. So Krishna gave our destiny. And the acharya is also giving us they're exposing you the real destiny, the real purpose of life. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says if you do this and this and this, you'll get this result. If you act in this guna and this guna and this, you'll get this result. If you worship the devas, you'll get this. If you worship me, you'll come back to Godhead. So it's a book on destiny, Bhagavad Gita. And it's being revealed, it's revealed by the acharyas. So it's knowledge. Knowledge is a tool for removing ignorance. But it's necessary in the beginning. We should have knowledge. Later on, we don't. When we have knowledge, it's not necessary to pursue the path anymore of knowledge. Knowledge, you're using different paths of jnana, yoga, etc., generally jnana, to understand things clearly. when that knowledge is received and understood, then one should give up the knowledge itself, and also give up the process of knowledge. Whatever process you use to get that should be given up. Krishna says, the process, the knowledge itself, which was. I'm speaking pretty loud. Yeah, the knowledge itself and the process of knowledge. So Knowledge is I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. And I should engage in his service. So that's knowledge. Once you know that, there's no need for research or anything like that. The path of Gyan is not necessary. You come to the conclusion. So therefore you don't need the process of Gyan to understand anything, or whatever process you're using. Vishwanath Chakravarti gives an example of giving up the process of knowledge. He said that sometimes there is an attack on the city, and the king, he opens his armory. He has an armory with all these swords and everything inside. And he gives them out to the public, the general men, citizens. Someone's attacking our city, we have to defend. So he has his soldiers, but also the emergency, so he calls all the citizens, and they all get the sword to protect the city. But after the enemy's been conquered and driven out, then they give their swords back to the godown, to the king. He puts them back in the godown. It's not necessary anymore. But at the time it was necessary to have that sword to kill the enemies. But once the enemy's retreated, he doesn't need the sword anymore, so he gives it back to the king. So that's the example, that give up the process of knowledge and knowledge itself. So so this is the secret, how we hear and receive knowledge is through parampara. I said to Prabhupada one, I asked Srila Prabhupada one time about deity worship. There's 64 upacharas. The fifth one is asana. I asked him, what is the meaning of this asana? And he said, yes, the asana, that is for the guru. You bring the bogar in and you put it before the picture of guru. And then the guru, he offers to his guru, and he offers to his guru. Like this, he said, it would go up to Lord Chaitanya and then Radha Krishna. And then it would come back as Mahaprasad. He said, this is the system, parampara. Parampara. So this is the system how we receive knowledge. Otherwise I would go in and I would offer directly to Krishna, the boga. Whether he would accept it or not, if I was a pure devotee, he would accept it. But there's no saying, is it? And also risky, because you have to do everything perfectly. I'm coming to serve you, Krishna. Okay, so you got to be on your P's and Q's, because you're going to serve Krishna. But if you approach the Lord in the mood of servant, of his servant. Then there's a much safer situation. We're not approaching the door directly and kindly offer these foodstuffs. We approach like when we enter into the deity room, we pay our obeisances to spiritual master and we beg his permission to enter the deity room to assist him in serving the deity. So we're not directly going to serve Krishna, but we're actually assisting the servant of the servant. So this is parampara. We're offering rice and dal, shak, something. We're offering to Krishna directly. You kindly accept your foodstuffs. But if we offer to Guru first, Parampara, you kindly accept it and offer to your Guru, then Guru also, he sees, or he knows something that Krishna likes. Preparate nice preparation, or Radharani likes, or dal kachuris and things like that, plum jam. They have some favorites. So then Guru, he will offer that also, put it on the plate. And then the next Guru, he may have some speciality, he likes it, or he knows Krishna likes, so he'll add it, and he'll add it, and he'll add it. So by the time it gets to Srimati Radharani, and she has 50 stoves in the kitchen, Jasoda has 50 stoves in her kitchen, and Radharani is coming every day to cook for Krishna, because she got one benediction from one Durvasa Muni. Whatever you cook like will be like nectar. So Jasoda said, my son, he must only have nectar. He only has the best. I must give him nectar. You must come every day to my house, Radharani, and you must cook for my Krishna, because you make nectar. So she has 50 stoves there. Radharani's there with all of her shakis, and they're grinding spices and cutting vegetables, and Radharani is running from one stove to another, putting in some spice, and sweating, it's hot, running around, making all these preparations. Then finally Radharani offers to Krishna. So when we just offered rice, dal, shak, and some sabji. But when it went out, when Krishna got it, he was shukta shakayati bhaji nalita kushmando dali danda dukta tumbida dimuchakanda mudga bara masha bara rutika kritan. These are some of the preparations Krishna likes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was bogartik song. He's describing that Krishna's. Actually, it's quite early in the morning. It's a breakfast. It's a big breakfast. I mean, it's chapana bhog. I mean, it's 56 items. But it's Krishna's breakfast, because he has to have a big, big breakfast, because he's in the, go out with the boys and the calves whole day, and Mother Jasoda's in complete anxiety. He'll be hungry. He won't eat enough. He'll get skinny. So that big feast is offered. We cannot make such a big feast early in the morning. So we have our Raj Bhog at 12 o'clock. So we. Here we offer like 20 items every day. So. But when Radharani is there, and Krishna will get chapan bhog, all those different. So this is the idea of parampara. We're just offering some rice and dal and shak. But the parampara are there. They're still guiding us. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is going on under the direction of the previous acharyas, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada's quote. So this is how we can understand through the parampara. We get parampara, it's access to Godhead. If we connect ourselves to the parampara, we have access to Godhead. So this is the mystery. Unless you accept parampara, how you will just, I am Krishna's servant, I will go and serve Krishna. Okay, you can do that if you think you're qualified, but be careful, because if you make any mistake, then but you're going as a servant of Guru, and you make so many mistakes, and Krishna says, he's only a helper anyway. Not really important. He's just a helper. He's not significant. My devotees, they'll offer to me properly. So Krishna speaks of his parampara in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And Sanjaya said, I heard this message of Bhagavad Gita through the parampara by the grace of my spiritual masters. Sanjaya's spiritual master was Srila Vyasadeva. So he's admitting that I heard this through the grace of my spiritual master. Vyasadeva wasn't there at the time. Nor was Sanjaya on the battlefield, but he knew exactly what was going on, because he was connected to the parampara, Vyasadeva. In the purport, in that purport, Srila Prabhupada said that he said here Sanjaya is admitting that he heard and saw also the Vishwarupa and all that at the battlefield. And he admits it's by the grace of his spiritual master, Vyasadeva. And Prabhupada said, this is the mystery of the parampara. This is the mystery of the parampara. That although we understanding philosophically that the food is actually going through the parampara in our meditation, and actually Guru is doing the seva and we're assisting the Guru. He said, although it's going through the parampara, Prabhupada said, but the experience is direct. But what you're doing, you're offering foodstuffs to Krishna, actually it's going through the parampara, but the experience is that no, I am directly serving Krishna. That is the experience. He said, this is the mystery of the parampara. The parampara are carrying the offering, but the experience is that is a real feeling that we are, the experience is real, he said. This is the mystery of the parampara. And that's what Guru wants. The experience is real. Krishna is there. I'm here and I'm making an offering. It's real. I don't see the Guru Parampara or anything like that. No, it's me. And this is exactly what Krishna and Guru want. They want us to awaken our relationship with Krishna. So therefore Prabhupada uses that term, transparent via media. Some terms Prabhupada used, I never heard in it. But transparent via media, of course, this is esoterical. But transparent via media means, so you see the nice palm trees there, but you're looking through the glass. If there wasn't any glass there, if there was a brick wall, you wouldn't see anything. But there's a glass there. But you're seeing the palm tree, you don't see the glass. But the glass is there, transparent, the glass is. So you see the beautiful palm tree behind, you're not seeing the glass. So similarly, by the mercy of the transparent by media, the Guru Parampara, the experience is direct, that you do directly see the palm tree, you don't see the glass. The glass is there. But the experience is direct. And this is what Guru wants. He wants you to awaken your service to Krishna. So here it is. He is Guru, is there, but he disappears. He's become transparent. And he's left you with Krishna. But philosophically, when we analyze it, we'll come to the conclusion, no Guru is there. Because we come out of the realm of bhakti into Shankar. What was just happening here, if we analyze it, we'll come to the conclusion, oh yes, Guru was doing. But when we're doing it, we can just absorb in the service. Then we realize that the experience is I am directly serving Krishna. So this is how the Krishna consciousness is awakened. We're getting trained up. By the parampara. Without the parampara, we wouldn't have access to Krishna or so therefore so important. So So these are the great acharyas are giving this science of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada naming all the great acharyas of India, Nimbarka, Ramanuja, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they're all giving knowledge, perfect knowledge of their particular styles of worship. Someone was asking, how do I know in my previous life I wasn't connected with the Ramanujacharyas or something like that? Huh? And he said, if you were, you probably were taking your birth in there, but you didn't, you took your birth somewhere here, and now you're in ISKCON. So, so anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was our leader. So there's no superior authority on Radha and Krishna than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he is Radha Krishna. So how can there be anyone more authoritative? So all these acharyas, they're authoritative in their particular lines of knowledge. So then we take shelter with the acharyas, then they can imbibe that knowledge. This is the whole process of Krishna consciousness. Descending process, the knowledge is coming, descending, given by others. And like this, it goes back to Godhead. You go back to Godhead by the mercy of the parampara, whether it's as your worshipful deities are Lakshmi Narayan or Sita Ram or Radha Krishna in the Punish. So you'll receive that type of knowledge and that type of revelation from that parampara who deal with that. So this prayer is very similar to Sanatana Goswami's prayer when he met Lord Chaitanya first. Amiki. I don't know who I am. I'm calling me Pandit, but I'm such a Pandit that I do not know who I am. So therefore, whatever I'm surrendering unto you. So this is his prayer. He's surrendering. And exposing life's purpose. So this was Sanatana Goswami. Kindly cut the knot from the core of my heart and let me know the destination of my life. Sanatana Goswami, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. Please tell me who I am and what I'm supposed to be doing. I know this was his prayer to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So like that, then by that connection, then Sanatana Goswami became one of the most prominent acharyas in our line, and so much instruction he's given us in his different teachings and writing. And he's what happens when you read all these teachings from our acharyas. They expose the real purpose of life. What I should be doing, what I should not be doing. So, knowledge is important in the beginning. So there's a nice portion in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the song of the Vanti Brahmana. Now he's asking a question: who do I blame for my problem, my miseries? Why am I suffering in this world? This is one of the questions. Why am I suffering these threefold miseries? Sanatana Goswami. So we should know why we are suffering threefold miseries. It helps to relieve it, if you have knowledge of what's actually happening. Our knowledge is a tool for removing ignorance. So he says, the Avanti Brahmana, this is the 11th canto, chapter 23, text 49. Persons who identify with the body, which is simply a product of the material mind, are blinded in their intelligence, thinking in terms of I and mine. Because of their illusion of this is I, but that is someone else, they wander in endless darkness. If you say these people were the people who They saw he was an Abadut wandering around, and the little kids would laugh at him, throw stones at him, and people, they would mistreat him. So he's asking, what is this suffering? Who is the cause of this suffering? If you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the soul in such a conception? The happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interaction of the material bodies. If someone bites his tongue with his own teeth, at who can one become angry in his suffering? I like that example. Who do you blame when you bite your tongue? So if you say the demigods who rule the bodily senses cause the suffering, it's mentioned in the Shastra that there are 84 crores, devatas, 8,400,000. Huh? No, 33 crores, sorry. 33 crores of devatas. And each devata, their controllers, means universal controllers, they control one point or not on your body. So they've all got their... And we are controlled by these demigods. They're doing all the moving in this material world. It's their situation. They worship the Visharup, who is the entire form of they're the managers of the universe, so they have to have potency and power to do it. So the demigod, we can say, well, the demigods are doing everything. It's quite logical. It's in the Shastra. But he says, if you say that the demigods rule the bodily senses, they cause suffering, still how can such suffering apply to the spirit soul? This acting and being acted upon is merely interaction of the changeable senses or their presiding deities. When one limb of the body attacks another, with whom the person can become angry? And if you say the soul himself was a cause of happiness and distress, then why should we blame others? Since happiness and distress will simply be the nature of the soul. According to this theory, nothing except the soul exists. And if we were to perceive something besides the soul, it would be illusion. Therefore, since happiness and distress do not actually exist in this concept, why become angry at others or oneself? If you understand also that the planetary systems, you hear planetary people saying, oh, my Bhrigu, my Rahul is in a bad place, or this Ketu is that, and I'm getting, a lot of people accept that, they believe it. I mean, it's truth also, to some extent. So it's due to the planetary systems. That's why I'm suffering. You can get calculation, and you'll see it's accurate. It's accurate. You're going to get some suffering, or you can get some good thinking. So the planetary systems are the cause of my suffering. He says expert astrologers have moreover explained how the planets are not only causing pain to each other, how the planets, that they only cause pain to each other. They're always having fights and battles, right? The planetary system. Therefore, since a living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against who should he vent his anger? And if you say fruitive work is the cause of happiness and distress, this is Jaimini's philosophy. Come on, my mom's philosophy. You just do your work nicely, you'll get a result. Why worship anyone? You worship them or not worship them, you still get the same result. So why bother worshipping anyone? Jaimini, atheistic philosophy. The idea is that material work arises when there is a spiritual actor who is conscious and a material body that undergoes the transformations of happiness and distress as a reaction of such work. Since the body has no life, it cannot be actual recipient of happiness and distress. And nor can the soul, who is ultimately completely spiritual and aloof from the material body, since karma thus has no ultimate basis either in the body or the soul, at whom can one become angry? Or if we accept time as the... Time is devouring everything. Everything is in the jaws of time like a black snake. Everything is being devoured by time. So if we accept time as a cause of happiness and distress, that experience still cannot apply to the spirit soul. Since time is a manifestation of the Lord's spiritual potency, and the living entities are also expansions of the Lord's spiritual potency, manifesting through time. Certainly, fire doesn't burn its own flames or sparks, and nor does the cold harm its own snowflakes or hail. Time is spiritual, it's eternal. So the living entity is eternal, the platform. So why would someone eternal put another eternal in distress? That doesn't make sense. So like that, he's refuting all of these different arguments. What is happiness? And distress. What is the cause of it? And who is actually the... Hare Krishna, who is actually the enjoyers and the sufferers? So this is something from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 23:54 onwards. And it says the soul cannot become angry at others since he is not personally enjoying or suffering. Rather, the false ego is doing this. It is only when the transcendental consciousness falsely identifies with dull matter that the living entity imagines he is enjoying and suffering in the material world. This illusory identification of consciousness with matter is called false ego, and it's the cause of material existence. On the basis of this false ego, the bodily covering factually overwhelms the spirit soul, and thus one falsely enjoys and suffers that which he has no real relationship with oneself. Persons who identify with the body, which is simply a product of the material mind, are blinded in their intelligence, thinking in terms of I and mine. Vishwanath gives a comment. What is the cause of the experience of suffering that we see? We see suffering, it's here, definitely. We feel it also, definitely, positively. So, what is the cause of the experience of suffering that we see? He says it is the imposition of the mind, and it arises only from ahankara. So you have ahankara, false ego, and mind, intelligence also. This is just the subtle body is there. False ego, intelligence and mind. These make up the subtle body. Although the false ego produces the mind and the senses and intelligence, and it's all coming from false ego. But still, when these three are together, the subtle body is there, mind, intelligence, ego. The mind, he takes the position of being the king above the false ego, even though it was manifested before the mind. The mind becomes the king of this, of the subtle body. Yeah, so the subtle body, which is predominated by the mind, so he's become the king of the subtle body. He's very, very powerful, very strong. All the great sages say that. It's not something that you can easily overcome without help from Krishna and Krishna's devotees. The idea is that we want to be the controllers, enjoyers, and have a place to control and enjoy. So Krishna's given it. This is called the material world. It's for our, it's fulfill our desires, not fulfill Krishna's desires. So it's very, very cleverly orchestrated by Krishna. So you cannot see through it. It's very difficult to comprehend what's going on right now and my consciousness, right now and others, and identifying with his body as being a man, woman, product of the material nature. It's very difficult, even for a couple of seconds. Maya doesn't switch off, and so you can see what's happening. Maya is moving everything at every moment. But we don't notice how it's moving at the moment. And this is Krishna's expertise, how he's arranging everything. So it's very we're trying to understand God's program. And he's made a program of illusion. We're trying to understand how to get out of this illusion. And it's Krishna's program, and he wants to keep us in illusion. He doesn't want to, but the facility is there to stay in illusion. So it's the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and causes one to wander in samsara. The jiva, however, accept the mind, known as the subtle body. And the samsara business arises from this imposition on the mind. The imposition on the mind is the false ego, which is the junction between spirit and matter. When you're on the at Puri, Jagannath Puri, ocean side, you put one foot in, you're standing on the ocean, and the wave comes, and then you're standing in water. Then the wave goes away again, and you're standing on land. Then the wave comes in, you're standing on water. So this is like the marginal potency. He can act spiritually or he can act materially. He can become land or he can become water. This is the Ahankara principle. So we, if we like, we can use our intelligence and to engage in Krishna consciousness, engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. Or if we like, being the marginal potency, we can engage our mind in trying to exploit, enjoy the material world. It was pointed out in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the fundamental principles of material nature. It describes how the elements are coming and how that the pure living entity is there. And at that time there is no manifestation of the modes of material nature. It's a Sudhashattva situation. The living entity is in Sudhashattva situation. Pure goodness. He could go back to Godhead at that time. He could choose, because there is no manifestation of his Vasudeva consciousness, pure consciousness. Then the false ego makes its appearance next. And false ego is that Purusha Bhava. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. I am my mamamiti. I am this body and these objects are mine to enjoy. Ah. Mamma metti. What was it saying? Oh, that's right. So the false ego appears. The next thing is from the pure situation of Shuddha Shatpati, the false ego appears here. And this is the, Prabhupada said in one place, this is a dictation. The false ego is a dictation of Shankarsana, also known as Lord Shiva. It's his Shakti, Shiva Shakti. Krishna, Lord Shiva is the Ahankara of Krishna in his universal form. The universal form described by so many in chapters in your eyes are like the sun and the moon, and your hairs are the herbs, and it goes on, so many descriptions of the universal form. But then that Krishna, his universe, also has a false ego. We are a material world, we have a false ego, so we haven't got more than Krishna. So Krishna also has a false ego. Otherwise we wouldn't have a false ego, whatever he has. So he has a false ego. That false ego is Lord Shiva, personified. There's one battle, it may be the battle of Bhaumashura. And he gets defeated by Krishna. Lord Shiva is offering prayers to Krishna. And he says, as far as I am concerned, I am your false ego. So that's Lord Shiva's. And false ego is, Lord Shiva is a guna avatara. Very difficult to, if he wants to do something, guna avatara. With false ego, who can check? A guna avatar. The Lord's so powerful. Okay, so so then the pure living entity, you, me, in pure Haribol, Vasudeva consciousness, let's go back to Godhead. But then suddenly, the next appearance is Ahankara principle. Purusha Bhava, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. The living entity said, yes, that's what I want, that's what we want, to be the controllers and enjoyers. Okay. The false ego, you're covered now. Anything that's come from the pure soul now has to go come through the false ego. It's tainted. Everything is coming through false ego. And we are tightly covered. So all of our thinking, feeling, and willing functions, they have to go. They're coming from us, but our consciousness is become covered, contaminated. So it has to come through this. All my thinking, feeling, and willing functions has to come through this false ego. In this way, we get completely bound up and forced to wander in this samsara business of birth and death. So, it's an imposition on the mind. The false ego's false ego's impression, imposition. It's an imposition on the mind. Anyway, that's the idea. So we adopt that the Purusha Bhava, that I'm the controller and enjoyer, the living entity says that's what I want. So he adopts it as his own consciousness. He thinks this is me now. He's got a new consciousness. And he identifies with it. So it's, the word they're using here is an imposition. An imposition on the mind. you impose something on something else. So the false ego is there. So we've imposed on that and adopted it as our own selves, as our own. Because it's saying, I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer. So that's what we want. So it's an imposition on the mind. And then the mind, that's what I want. I'll take over the subtle body because I'm the king. And I'm identifying myself with the false ego as being the controller and enjoyer. Happily and merrily, I'm going through life like this, identifying myself with a borrowed identity. It's not my identity, it's Lord Shiva's identity. Now we may say here what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, mind, intelligence, and ahankara, these are my material elements. So how can they actually be, how can they experience happiness and distress? It's just dull matter. Bhagavad Gita says, the material, this is my material energy. But the Brahma Samhita, yeah, the false ego is a junction between spirit and matter. So Lord Shiva is like that. He's milk, but he's become yogurt. His transformation is there. So sometimes he's treading on the land. He's on land, and sometimes he's on in the water. So then the ahankara, if it was just dead matter, there would be no question of enjoying or suffering for the for the ahankara. But because he's actually marginal, sometimes he can be spiritual, he can be material, and he can be milk, or he can become, he's milk, but he can become yogurt. So he's there. The experience is there also for the false ego. Is actually the chemical analysis of ahankara, false ego, is made of three things. One is the prone to become covered by maya, and another one is we're always lacking. What's the word? Lacking. We're always lacking. Insufficient. Just like we have insufficient knowledge. I don't know who I am. So insufficient and prone to be covered by the modes of material nature, the illusory potency. And the third one is the haladini potency. The pleasure come cognizant potency, haladini potency. Otherwise, where would that drive be? If there was no haladini potency, pleasure potency there, why would you we strive to do things if the pleasure wasn't there? So that's the false ego is made up of these three things. Anyway, the mind has imposed the false ego upon itself. So now he's identifying as something separate. So so it's due to this imposition on the mind So I am now these identifying false consciousness through false consciousness that I am the controller and the enjoyer. So then Krishna, now there is a need. Now there's a need of a universe. I am the controller, and but now you need something to control and something to enjoy. So that sets the whole creation going again. The whole creation, Prabhupada said, is like rolling out a carpet. Simultaneously, the material world is manifested. So that now is a need for it, because we have a desire to control and enjoy. We need a place to do it. This world is not for Krishna or Krishna's pleasure. But we need it. So when we adopt this false ego principle as myself and say that I am the control and enjoyer, now I need a place to control and enjoy. So Krishna, he creates it, because we cannot create the material universe. Krishna can. So he creates the material universe. Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, we'll finish off with something here. So here we have the material world. Material world is a manifestation of Durga Devi. It's her realm. Who is the enjoyer of Durga Devi? Not me? Can I be the enjoyer of Durga Devi? No, that's Shiva's position. Her husband, he can enjoy. But my false ego is dictating, I want to be the enjoyer. The false ego is also... whose potency? Lord Shiva. It's his potency. but I am thinking, no, this world is for my enjoyment. I am this body and this is mine. This world is mine to enjoy. But my experience is I am enjoying the material world and suffering. I'm experiencing it. So factually what's happening is that the ahankara, the false ego, which is Lord Shiva's energy, touches Durga. That verse in Bhagavad Gita, aham bija pratibhita, Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father. That's in reference to Lord Shiva. Krishna saying, I am the seed-giving father, but his avatar, his guna avatar, Shiva, actually is the seed-giving father, because Krishna doesn't touch material energy. So Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, said, I am the seed-giving father in the form of Lord Shiva. So then Lord Shiva, he touches and impregnates Durga Devi. Then everything starts to happen. So what is happening, we're in our imitation of being the enjoyers and Krishna. It is our false ego that is touching Durga. In other words, it's Lord Shiva is touching Durga. What is the harm? Lord Shiva is touching Durga. My false ego is touching, but my false ego is Shiva Shakti. So that's enjoying Durga Devi. What is the harm? Lord Shiva enjoying his wife. No, you're not the false ego. Exactly. This is what Krishna consciousness training is for. Yes, we are. Misunderstanding, yeah, exactly. misidentification. We're adopting someone else's identity as being mine. Identity crisis. We're trying to identify. We're trying to analyze through the process of knowledge, trying to analyze the false ego, my false ego. But what am I analyzing it with? I'm analyzing it with another identity, the mind, which is also not my real identity. So there's a kind of a double trap here. It's difficult to figure it out, but that's a faction. So,
it's like bluffing.
Huh?
It's like bluffing. I'm lying to you, but I'm bluffing.
Bluffing. Yeah. No, it's not a bluff. We really believe it. We don't think we're bluffing. We really believe that we are enjoyers of this. But the it's an adopted identity. We're taking the identity. Lord Shiva and Parvati are who? Who do they expand from? Huh? Mahavishnu Lakshmi. And who, where, Mahavishnu and Lakshmi expand from? Huh? Radha Krishna. So there's Shiva and Parvati, they're expansions of Radha and Krishna. So it's the ego falsely Shiva is touching Durga and Krishna is touching Radha, ultimately. Shiva and Parvati are expansions of Radha Krishna. So ultimately it's Radha and Krishna. There's nothing else in existence except Radha and Krishna's pleasure. Huh? That's Krishna's. No, our identity is servant of Ishvara. But Radha and Krishna expand as Lakshmi Narayana, as. And then into the material world, there's Mahadev and Parvati. So they're nothing but expansions of Radha and Krishna. So ultimately, Radha and Krishna are the only enjoyers. Ekliya Krishna, Harshabdhavita, that Krishna is the only master, and all others are his servants. So when we put ourselves in a position again of being a servant, that's the end of knowledge, that's the end of Jnana. Nothing else to be achieved as far as knowledge is concerned. Just now we want seva, that's all. We want to increase Radha and Krishna's pleasure through the medium of service. That's our only business. Then we can forget our other identities. Being this controllers and enjoyers. Sorry, I'm a bit late. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari. Hari Ramo, Hari Ramo, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Thank you. Prabhupada ki.